Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and remember, we are talking politics, left, right, and other, in this time slot every day through the New York primary on September 14th. Already this week, we've had Congressman Charles Rangel and his Democratic primary challengers, and all the Republicans running in the primaries to challenge Senators Gillibrand and Schumer. In a few minutes, we'll speak with Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney from Manhattan and Queens and her Democratic primary challenger, Reshma Soljani. Issues in that race include how full-throated to be in defending the Lower Manhattan Islamic Cultural Center and how tough a New York congressperson should be on our biggest industry, Wall Street. Before we get to Soljani and Maloney, here are some of today's political headlines. Watch for fireworks tomorrow near the site of the Lincoln Memorial on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. There will be competing rallies by Glenn Beck and the Reverend Al Sharpton. The Beck rally, also featuring Sarah Palin and billed as an apolitical rally to restore honor to America, is being widely denounced by African Americans who see Beck as racist and the date of the speech as race baiting. Quoted in the Washington Post today, Beck says that he did not intentionally choose the I Have a Dream anniversary and location for his rally, but that he believes the coincidence is divine providence. A niece of King will be among the speakers. Black conservative Jimmy Hollis says liberals are quick to ask for tolerance when it comes to putting a permanent mosque next to Ground Zero, but they were quick to oppose Beck using the Lincoln Memorial on the King anniversary. It's a double standard, unquote. The Washington Post says the Republican Party is mostly trying to distance itself from the Beck rally and that the event will test the strength and potentially expose the weaknesses of a conservative grassroots movement that remains an unpredictable force in the country's politics. Earlier this week on our show, former Bush administration advisor Ken Edelman said he was disappointed in former President Bush for not coming out publicly to support the Lower Manhattan Islamic Cultural Center, something Edelman thinks Bush would support because of his long efforts to encourage moderate Islam and his administration's relationship with Imam Rauf. Bush has not spoken publicly on any issue since leaving the White House, but he is quoted today by former Republican Party Chairman Ken Mellman, who revealed this week that he is gay. Mellman told Politico that he spoke to President Bush about coming out and that Bush is incredibly supportive. No word on whether Mellman asked him about the mosque. And competing takes today on the new Mideast peace talks prospects for success. Conservative George Will writes in his Washington Post column that they will probably just make things worse because only Israel is susceptible to U.S. pressure for concessions, which they may make, while the Palestinian leadership is unlikely to budge. But former Clinton Middle East negotiator Martin Indyk writes in the New York Times that both sides may be more primed for progress than most people think. He uses as evidence that Israel has pretty much stopped building in the West Bank since March, and that Palestinian terrorist attacks have also dropped substantially, with only 2 Israelis killed this year and 6 last year, compared to 450 deaths in 2002. Those talks are set for next Friday in Washington. And those are some political headlines from today's media. Now on to Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, the 18-year incumbent from Manhattan's East Side and Western Queens, and her Democratic primary challenger, former hedge fund lawyer Reshma Soljani. Congresswoman Maloney first. Congresswoman, welcome back to WNYC.
Well, I'm pleased to be here. How's your summer been, Brian?
It's been very well, thank you. And first, on the current political obsession, the Lower Manhattan Islamic Cultural Center, the Daily News this week quoted Ms. Soljani criticizing you for being very quiet about your support for the project while she is being clear and direct, she says, about the importance of supporting it. Are you supporting construction in that Park Place location?
Yes, I do support it. Our nation is built on the principles of tolerance and inclusiveness, and that's one of the reasons why we're better than the terrorists. And we have been long supporters, our country, and I certainly support America's First Amendment, the right to freedom of speech, religion, and assembly. And I support the Community Board 1. President Obama and Mayor Bloomberg, along with others that understand this important constitutional principle, and I have put this on my website. I have sent out a statement, and that's it.
And she says you put out one statement back on August 5th and haven't spoken up since.
I have spoken up whenever anyone has asked me, and I feel we should all get to work in helping our city and our country. I can't respond to absolutely every time she wants me to make a statement. I've made the statement, and my statement speaks for itself, and I've made it repeatedly. If that's not good enough for her, then that's her problem.
On another issue, Ms. Sojani is a former hedge fund lawyer, and she says we have to extend a hand, not a fist, to Wall Street. With your credit card reform legislation and the larger banking reform bill, do you think you've hurt New York's economy by targeting its biggest industry?
Absolutely not. I truly do believe that the financial regulatory reform bill will actually be beneficial to New York's financial sector. We need to make sure that New York remains a leader in the financial services industry, and the smart and balanced regulation in the bill will do just that. The bill has already brought stability and will ensure the long-term success of this vital industry to our country. These reforms will protect our economy from excessive risk-taking and will make sure that taxpayers will not be required to spend one more penny on bailing out financial institutions that had excessive risk and had totally unregulated products.
So Johnny says it's just as easy for investment firms to go to work in Singapore and London and Bangalore, and we can't make it so difficult to do business here that people will vote with their feet. What's your response to that?
Well, New York is the financial sector and the financial capital of the world. And I believe that that markets run more on trust than anything else. And if it's more important even than capital. And one of the reasons that we have been and are the financial capital is that people trust our markets. They trust our workers. They trust our institutions. They trust the fair and balanced regulation that we've put forward. I will want to underscore, Brian, that the bill did not create anything new in the financial system except for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It did bring unregulated aspects of the industry into regulation. And I would say probably the best example of this was AIG. In the regulated area of insurance, there was absolutely no problem, but it was the unregulated area of credit default swaps that caused the problem. And in this particular bill, we bring that into regulation also.
On the credit card reform, which you proudly touted as your credit card bill of rights, we see now that rather than jack up fees on late payers, as is now harder to do, they're raising rates on all credit card interest, which the bill does not prohibit. So did you only accomplish spreading the burden from those not paying on time to everyone with credit card debt?
Well, Money Magazine has called my bill the best friend a credit card user ever had, and it cracked down on unfair, deceptive, and anti-competitive practices. And according to the Pew Foundation in a report that they came out with roughly a month ago, in 1 year alone, this bill will save consumers $10 billion. USA and World Report came out with a report that the bill will save $5 billion. It absolutely prohibits unfair practices, such as raising rates any time, any reason, even when consumers pay on time and don't go over their limit, and very importantly, prohibiting the issuers from putting that interest increase on the balance, in many cases capturing consumers and never-ending cycles of debt. One of the core principles of the bill is that if you are going to raise the interest rate, you must tell the consumer and give them 45 days notice, whereby the consumer can decide whether they opt in to this interest rate increase or pay off their card at the existing balance and go to another card with lower interest rates. And I would say to consumers and your listeners, if you feel that your credit card interest rate is too high, Just shop around. There are others out there with much lower rates.
Do you think on one level you traded transparency, that is, you got transparency, in exchange for average interest rates going higher?
I would say no. The Federal Reserve, when they had a hearing on the rule, on the bill, they had more comments than they've ever had in the history of the Federal Reserve. Over 65,000 consumers wrote in. And they, after their review and their hearings, they issued a report that said that transparency was not enough, that the tricks and traps were so confusing, so concealed, that consumers could not understand them. And consumers had, in some cases and with some issuers, 10, 20 pages of transparency that no one read or no one understood. So this stopped abusive practices and up front tells you what the interest rate is. And there are people out there, industries or other issuers, that have much lower rates. So a consumer, it gives the consumer tools to better manage their own credit and puts competition back in the system. The Federal Reserve, whose prime responsibility is safety and soundness of our financial institutions, ruled that these practices were unfair, deceptive, and anti-competitive. So consumers need to be aware, and when they get an interest rate increase, don't opt into that increase. Go to another card with a lower rate and pay it off. It will bring competition back into the system. And if it's true what USA Today says and what the Pew Foundation says, if the industry issues a report saying the opposite, are you surprised?
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we continue to talk politics in this time slot every day until the New York primary. We are talking now with Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney from the east side of Manhattan and some pieces of western Queens. We'll talk next with her challenger in the Democratic primary, Reshma Soljani. Ms. Soljani has questioned your ethics for holding two fundraisers with investment firms while you sit on the House Financial Services Committee. Is that not a conflict of interest?
Well, I have a record of fighting for New Yorkers on big issues after another, standing up to special interests. No one is criticizing any of my votes on the Financial Service Regulatory Reform Bill. If anything, I've won applause for standing up for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, for standing up for the appointment of Elizabeth Warren to head it. The Bureau is only going to be as good as the person who's appointed, and I have worked with Chairman Frank with letters and others to champion her appointment. She came up with the idea. She's done a magnificent job as the head of the Oversight TARP Board. She would be an excellent head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. No one is criticizing my record of holding Wall Street accountable, of standing up to big oil, of taking on issuers and credit card companies that have unfair practices. Let me be clear, Brian, that not every issuer has unfair practices. There are many that do not. But we certainly want a level playing field and to stop the unfair and deceptive practices.
So you're saying you may be running fundraising from people on Wall Street while you're on the Financial Services Committee, but your record shows that you have not been subject to their undue influence. Is that basically what you're saying?
Well, 70% of my contributions come from individuals. And my record speaks for itself. The Washington Post said I was a leader in financial regulatory reform. The president gave me a kiss and the pen for the Credit Card Bill of Rights, but consumers got much, much more. They got protection from abusive practices. And as my father used to say, before someone tells you what they'll do, ask them what they've done. And I have a record of fighting, taking on special interest from the days that I was a volunteer. I was the chair of the Issues Committee of Common Cause years ago, leading the fight for campaign finance reform. It was the first bill that I introduced when I went to the city council. It took me 10 years to pass it. It was called the best in the nation. And then chaired the freshman class's campaign finance reform and committee and worked with the leadership to pass the federal campaign finance reform
bill. You mentioned your kiss from the president. Here's another another question about a smooch. Your opponent criticized your attendance at Congressman Rangel's 80th birthday fundraiser this month and giving him a kiss and a $2,500 check, considering the ethics charges against him. How should the public see you for that, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, I was not able to go to his birthday party, and I had a prior commitment that was very important to my family.
So the kiss was on another occasion.
I tell you, it's hard for me to keep up with what everybody says about me. I just keep on working to help people.
More to the point, did you give him a $2,500 check for this year?
The Congressman Rangel is a dear friend of mine. He is entitled to due process just like every other American. And he is going forward with hearings and a review that will look at his record. Some people have said that he should resign and walk away immediately. He has said that he would like the right of every other American to be able to present his case. I support his rights and your rights, Brian, and every single American's rights to go to court and to defend themselves against allegations. And he will face a jury or a judge or whatever. Like every other American, I support due process. I'd say let due process go forward.
She says not giving a more critical response than that kind of answer, more skeptical response, considering the Ethics Committee charges against Rangel, that it reflects the broken political system of the chummy incumbents. What would you say to that?
I would say that Nancy Pelosi brought in very stiff reforms. I have authored and passed reforms of the legislative process on disclosure of lobbying activities, on campaign finance reform, and I am adhering to the principles and the letter of the law of the new reforms that Speaker Pelosi and the Democrats have put in place. If another Democrat or another Republican do not live up to these standards, then there is a process in place to review their activities. I would say let the process work. I support reform. I voted for it. I am living by that reform in my life and in my activities. And I am working hard for the people I have the great honor of representing in the 14th Congressional District.
And finally, before we hear from Ms. Ajani herself, she has gone so far as to say that you, quote, rank at the bottom of our New York delegation and are a mediocre representative when we need excellence at this time, unquote. Want to argue to your constituents why people should see your record as excellent, not mediocre?
Well, U.S. News and World Report recently rated me as the most active Democrat in the House in terms of authoring and passing legislation. I am proud of the work that my office does and that I do to help individuals with their problems, whether it's Social Security or housing, their individual problems, but also broader problems that help individuals nationally, such as the Credit Card Bill of Rights, such as the Debbie Smith Bill, which has been called the most important anti-rape legislation ever, such as the anti-trafficking laws, such as bringing to my district the two largest construction projects, not in New York, not in New York State, but in the entire country, which has $4 billion committed to the building of the Second Avenue subway and the Queens Manhattan connector, investing in the infrastructure of our great city for the 21st century, and employing, according to the MTA, 38,000 New Yorkers who need those jobs.
Right.
I view public service very much as a loan, one that I must repay each and every day that I am in office.
And right on cue, your cell phone is breaking up
We're
out of time. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, the 18-year incumbent from Manhattan's East Side and a part of Weston Queens, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
And now, Congresswoman Maloney's challenger in the Democratic primary in that district. She is Reshma Sojani, a 34-year-old former hedge fund lawyer, an 8-year resident of New York, in her first run for public office. Ms. Sojani, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. I'm excited to be here.
You heard Congresswoman Maloney's list of her accomplishments, according to her. Is that the record of someone you call mediocre in the bottom of the New York delegation?
Look, I think that one of the things that voters all across this district are struggling with is that political process is broken, and we're not going to fix this economy on a broken political process. And Congressman Maloney, as chair of the Joint Economic Committee, has released press statement after press statement saying that things are getting better. 25% of our recent college grads can't find a job. 47% of people in Queensbridge are unemployed. You know, this race is about job creation, and we've put forth in our campaign the best ideas of how we get New Yorkers working again. In that, you know, 20-minute segment with Congressman Maloney, she talked about the past. She didn't talk about the future. She didn't offer one new idea on how we're going to fix our economy. And right now, people are concerned with the future. They're concerned about their children's future. And mother after mother I talk to, whether it's in the Upper East Side, the Lower East Side, or in Queens, say the same thing. They don't believe that their children are getting the same economic and educational opportunities that they had. And in this campaign, we've offered two job creation ideas, and I'd love to talk about them briefly. You know, the first is we need a 21st century job corps. One out of four Americans that are unemployed are construction workers. Many of those people are in our district. The Department of Labor is sitting on a pot of money for retraining. And for $1,500, you can get a grant at the Department of Labor, go to LaGuardia Community College, take a course in solar panel installation or retrofitting, and get a good paying job. We can get millions of people back to work on thinking about these long-term job creation ideas. The second thing that we've talked about is that New York City has the capacity to become the next Silicon Valley. When I started running for office, one out of three people I knew were unemployed. And a lot of the companies that they got laid off from, they weren't going to hire again, probably not for another 5 or 6 years. And so for them to get back into the workforce, they were going to have to start their own companies. And I talked to every tech entrepreneur or every woman or man who wanted to have a startup, and I said, what is it that you need? What can the federal government actually do? And for a lot of these people who are starting their new business, it was that first $50,000 or $100,000 that they needed to get access to, because since they didn't have a record in creating creating a business, they needed assistance. And so we've come up with the idea of a national innovation fund, which will help seed investment and job creation in industries we can lead in, like biotech, clean tech, and renewable tech. You know, it's not going to be – automobiles aren't going to be the jobs of the future. It's going to be infrastructure and renewable energy. The point is we cannot afford to have small Band-Aid solutions coming out of Congress right now. We need big ideas, new ideas, and ideas that are about the long-term health and economic health of our nation.
The Washington Post last month did a long article on you that painted you as the candidate of the super rich. Let me read from that article. It says, to the dismay of her ultra-rich constituents, among them more than a few Wall Street billionaires, Maloney has become one of the Capitol's leading advocates for tough new restrictions on the banking and credit card industries. The way the people at the cocktail party see it, Maloney betrayed them, and they want her fired. So Johnny has positioned herself as the anti-Maloney, the only candidate who understands how stressful and difficult the past few years have been for some of the wealthiest people in America, unquote from Philip Rucker's article in the Washington Post. Did Maloney betray her ultra-rich constituents, and are you the one who feels their pain?
Look, sis, I'm the daughter of political refugees. You know, my parents were forced to flee Uganda in 1973. I've had a job my entire life. I'm $100,000 student loan debt, and I really, you know, my story is about the American dream and about a daughter from middle-class parents who's now running for Congress 37 years later. We've been really clear on our position, Brian. I support reform. You know, we've said that from the beginning. And I also feel like this reform bill didn't go far enough. And part of it is because of the special interests and the corporate interests that watered down the bill. In fact, it didn't have a provision on credit agency reform. And one of the things we've talked about is that there's a constant revolving door between, you know, S&P and Goldman Sachs. And that conflict of interest needs to be dealt with if we're ever going to have real reform. So this isn't about, you know, this isn't as if, you know, Wall Street has propped up a candidate because they're angry with Congressman Maloney. You know, this is about the fact that we need to have new leadership, and people are sick and tired of that Albany style of politics that, unfortunately, Carolyn Maloney represents.
Well, on this idea of Wall Street propping up a candidate because they don't like Carolyn Maloney. That same Washington Post article says you had raised, as of early July, $800,000, and many of those checks had come from New York financiers and their spouses, like former Morgan Stanley CEO Leon Black and J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon's wife. The liberal website Fire Dog Lake says Wall Street has bought themselves a candidate to run against Maloney. So how should people see those donations?
It's simply not true. We had made a firm line. We said we're not taking a single dollar in corporate PAC money. I have challenged Carolyn Maloney to do the same thing, and she's refused. We've gotten over 2,000 individual contributions from people from all walks of life. You know, from people, teachers, firefighters, people in the banking industry. And so these are people who live in the district, who care about the everyday issues. And the other thing is, I'm the first Indian woman to run for Congress. And this district, the largest minority group is South Asian. And if you were to go back and look at a lot of those, quote, you know, Wall Street contributions, they're from members of the community who are so proud that someone from the community is actually running. They want their daughter and their son to look at someone whose name is Reshma Sajani and think that they can run one day, too. That's what this is about.
Why are the Macs and Diamonds backing your your candidacy?
That's something that you're going to have to ask them. But in my conversations with them, I think people feel like we don't have real leadership and that job and, you know, job creation is the most important thing. And one of the things that we have talked about in our campaign is that we need an FDR moment right now. The unemployment rate is so high that the government is not going to be able to do it on their own. And I believe that to create a biotech presence or renewable energy presence, we're going to have investment by small, medium, and large business. You know, I've pushed the private sector to say, let's have a renewable energy desk on every single trading floor. When I talk to startups who want to start the next solar panel company, they say, look, it's really hard for us to access capital, you know, from the private sector, from Wall Street. I want to put pressure on Wall Street to invest in America again. And this has happened before in New York.
You're talking today about pressure. Sorry, you're talking today about pressure on Wall Street. What about that quote that I read to Congresswoman Maloney of you where you said we need to extend a hand, not a fist, to Wall Street, implying that she was extending a fist and you would extend a hand?
Well, I'm extending, I think, creativity and innovation, how we get small, medium, and large business to deal with our unemployment rate. And so I think that we need to have everybody sitting around the table. And FDR said the same thing when we went through another depression a long time ago. And that's the type, I think, of attitude that we need to see right now. And unfortunately, Congressman Maloney, she's not a pro-jobs Democrat. You know, she's not someone who has been out there and is seen as somebody from, you know, the bodega owner in Queens, you know, to someone who's running, you know, a medium-sized company in Manhattan as someone who's really going to support growth. I think people are, you know, every month she's released a statement saying that things are getting better. And I talk to mothers and grandmothers every day, and they're outraged by those statements because it just demonstrates that she doesn't have her feet on the ground. She's got to put her talking points down, get out of the Washington bubble, and be honest with the American people.
Do you oppose the credit card bill of rights that Maloney is so proud of passing this year, or think she and the Democrats in Congress were too tough in the financial reform overall?
No, I support the bill, but I wish that it didn't take a couple of months to implement and everyone's credit card, you know, rates were jacked up. You know, there are a lot of angry people in our district and small business owners who are still facing outrageous rates. I think that there's more work to be done. And it was a loophole that should have been closed.
On another issue, you criticized Congresswoman Maloney, as I asked her, for not being outspoken enough in her support of the Islamic Cultural Center for downtown. How big a supporter are you?
I want to talk about her statement a couple of minutes ago because I think it was insulting to every single Christian, Jew, Muslim, and Hindu in this district. She doesn't get it. This isn't about me. This is about the people in our district. They want our Democratic leaders to exercise some political courage. It's not about releasing a press statement. It's about getting out there and fighting for freedom and religious tolerance. There are no boundaries around the right to pray. And in fact, I've been out there doing her job for her and been on Fox News arguing with Dick Armey and talking about the importance and the principles that this nation stands for. I mean, we saw this yesterday. We had a taxi cab driver who was violently attacked for his religion. People are really passionate about this issue, and I have just been incredibly disappointed with Congressman Maloney's lack of leadership on this.
And on the Rangel issue, you heard her invoke due process and say she'll judge Rangel as unfit if the ethics committee comes to that conclusion. In the meantime, there's going to be a trial.
Well, I disagree with her. And let's talk about the ethics committee for a second here. You know, the ethics committee is made up of members. It's members who decide what committee you're going to get in, what bill they're going to support. That process is broken. And one of the ideas that we've offered is that we need an independent ethics commissioner. We don't have a fair and just process right now, and we need to change it.
The ethics committee, explain that. I'm curious about that. Because ethics committee, unlike other committees, is divided into an equal number of Democrats and Republicans, no matter who's in charge of Congress at the time.
But
so,
it's still
ahead.
Members making claims against other members. So they're still part of the same club, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to change that system.
And how would you do it? Explain how that...
I think that we should have an independent commissioner who's not a member of Congress who's evaluating this. And we have similar roles like that in government. I just, right now, Brian, you know, I try to talk to about 100 voters a day. And all of them say the same exact thing. We are so sick of the process here in New York. You look at Albany, you look at Washington, it's our New York delegation, our state assembly, our city council, they've lost their ethics and their integrity, and we have to increase the bar. And until we do that, we're not going to change the political process. And so Carolyn Maloney, she should hold herself, I hold her, to the highest level of ethics and integrity. She should be the first one that's standing up and saying, wait a minute, this is wrong. You know, people have lost faith in the process right now, and we have to change it.
You
alluded a bit to, go ahead, I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, go ahead and finish your thought, but real quick, because we're running out of time.
Well, you alluded to the fact about the ethics, you know, the fundraisers that she had, and I wanted to talk about that because it's another example of the lack of Carolyn's, I think, the difference of values between me and her. You know, she held two fundraisers, one at the home of a financial service lobbyist, while she was the conferee negotiating the most important bill. And when asked about it, she lied, and she said she didn't realize she was at her own fundraiser. We have asked her over and over again, if you don't think you did anything wrong, release the names of the people who were at those two events. Because under the ethics committee, it is illegal for you to hold a fundraiser while you're regulating the very people that you're seeking to regulate.
And she would say, I guess, that look at her record. She raised money from those people, but she supported the credit card bill of rights. She supports the consumer protection, the Financial Consumer Protection Agency, which they hated. She supports Elizabeth Warren to run that agency, who they hate. And that you take a lot of money from Wall Street, too. Do you support Elizabeth Warren, and did you support that creation?
Those are two different things, right? The bill that just passed was not the same credit card bill we're talking about. We're talking about the bill, the financial services bill that just recently passed.
Do you support?
Everybody would agree that bill was watered down. So we'll have no idea what effect that the financial service lobbyists had on Carolyn Maloney's position.
Do you support the Consumer Financial Protection Agency that's in that bill?
Oh, absolutely. I support the CFPA.
And do you support Elizabeth Warren to run it?
I actually haven't made my decision of who I support, but I think she would be an excellent choice.
Okay. Take 30 seconds to tell the voters anything else you want.
September 14th, this is a critical election. You know, President Obama always says you can't send the same people back and expect a different result. This election is so critical, and it's the first time in 20 years you've had the opportunity to go to the polls and vote for somebody else because Carolyn Maloney has kicked everybody else off the ballot. It is critical that we get new ideas and new leadership. Our nation is depending on it. And this race isn't just about my race. It's about the fact that we need to have real leadership and excellent representation. And there are so many people around this country who want to run who are watching this race. And when we win on September 14th, we are going to see a groundswell of new, fresh perspectives, new leaders who are running for Congress all around this nation, and we're going to get things done.
Reshma Soajani, running in the Democratic primary for Congress in the district currently represented by Carolyn Maloney, who we heard from just before. Thank you so much for joining us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.